Hello and welcome back to the Couple's Guide to Stranger Things podcast. I'm Sian.
And I'm Tom.
And we're just a couple of super fans who met through our love of Stranger Things.
This is part two of Trick or Treat, Freak.
Shall we dive in?
We already have. This is part two.
Should we dive in again?
Let's go back.
So before we do go into part two of the episode, the fact that it's called Trick or Treat, Freak reminds me, when I was little, me and my siblings went trick-or-treating, and you know what it's like. You go up to the house, you say, trick-or-treat. Usually, the people don't even say anything. They just go like, oh, you look nice, or here you go, and they hand you the candy, the sweets, the chocolates. And I remember one time, we went up to this man's house, and we're like, trick-or-treat, and he went, trick. And we just froze. We were like, what? And he was like, tell me a joke. We were like, probably told the most pathetic child joke you could ever imagine. And then he was like, here you go, here's some sweets. I don't know how many kids he did that to, but he obviously was having a time of his life.
Yeah. Well, I remember sometime we went trick-or-treating and someone did that to us. Another man, after we knocked on the door, he said, trick. But instead of waiting for us to do anything, he was just performing magic tricks.
Oh, okay. That's a bit different.
I can't remember if they were any good.
But it's a risky game, isn't it? Well, because with them saying trick, you could, like, throw toilet roll at them.
You could have a box of eggs behind your back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other person we knocked on the door off, that I can remember, same night, knocked on the door, couldn't even get out trick. They just shouted, F off.
Oh, Tom's from a city.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say.
That's all we need to say.
It's a little bit different from my little village.
Yeah.
That I was brought up in. Oh dear. What did you say to that? Anything? Did they just shut the door?
He slammed the door as soon as he said it.
Oh, that is mean.
So pretty much just span on our heels and thought, okay.
Well, I was going to say he deserves the mind flayer, but that's a bit extreme.
He deserves the eggs.
He deserves the eggs, yes, and the toilet roll. Oh, dear.
Make him Demogorgon eggs.
Ooh, creepy. Right, sorry, people, but it just came to mind.
Yeah, well, we're not professional, so deal with it.
So the next scene, we've gone through the scenes, we've compiled them, haven't we?
Yeah, because we noticed in last episode you were sort of looking ahead on your notes and thinking, oh,
this works well with this. And
exactly.
Yeah.
That later on scene is a continuation of this, so let's just talk about that now.
Exactly.
But now you've ordered them all in that order rather than scene order now.
Yeah. And I mean, the next one is Bob and Joyce. So while the kids are all out trick-or-treating, Jonathan's at the party currently. They are alone. They're watching... Are they watching a horror... No, they're not watching a horror movie yet. They're dancing.
They are dancing, yeah.
He puts on... He's dressed as a vampire. And he puts on the music. Yeah. Islands in the Stream, you know. Yeah. Kenny Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And Dolly Parton. And they just dance. And it's such a wholesome moment.
Yeah, it is. It is wholesome. And something I notice is... While Joyce is there feeling uneasy, Bob's like, don't worry, he's with Jonathan. No, he isn't.
Yeah, I know.
but this he's is with it. Everyone else.
It's such a lovely moment because she feels so safe with Bob.
Yes.
And he just wants to protect her.
Yeah.
And he does care about her children. And he, you know, just like you said, he knew exactly what she was tense and worried about.
Yeah. Despite not knowing what happened last year.
No.
Other than the fact that Will disappeared, he doesn't know where he disappeared to.
Yeah.
Doesn't know what they've been through, and yet somehow he still manages to be perfect for her.
That's like, it. Because, like, how many people, like, just from the way that Will gets treated, you can imagine the kind of gossip that was going on about Will's disappearance.
Yeah.
And Bob doesn't care. Like, obviously he cares about Will, but I mean... He doesn't care about any kind of impression that there is of Joyce and her family. Like, yeah. He idolises her, he does love her.
Well, that's it. If the first shadow's considered canon, then he's after her from day one.
Yeah, he admires her so much in The First Shadow. Obviously, they're teenagers together.
Yes.
And she is just like his ideal woman, isn't she?
He's dead set on her.
Yeah.
That's it. There's nobody else.
You can tell, like, in his mind, he's like, that is the woman I'm going to marry one day, kind of thing. And it is lovely. And
that would have been the case if it weren't for those damn dogs.
I know. And that made me think of the snakes on a plane thing then. Wait, did I say that wrong?
Snakes on a plane. I'm tired of these MFing snakes on this MFing plane.
Yeah. I was thinking, I'm tired of these effing dogs in this effing lab.
Yeah. I was trying to think of how to mix the thing, but there you go. You did it for me.
There we go. But, like, yeah, he says to her as they're dancing and everything that, you know, that they should leave Hawkins and that they should go to Maine where his parents are selling a house and he could get a Radio Shack job there. He could transfer. They could have a new start. Because he knows how difficult it is for her being in Hawkins and how tense it makes her.
Yeah.
And it just made me think, I wonder what would have happened if they had moved. Because Will, obviously, at the present moment, everything that's going on within him is going to follow him no matter where he goes.
Well, that is the problem. It doesn't matter where he is. It's the thing is, anyone on an outside view for Will, thinking it's just PTSD, might truly think being in Hawkins is a bit of a trigger.
Yeah.
If PTSD, I'm sure it would be.
Yeah.
But this isn't PTSD, unfortunately. So.
No. I mean, I'm sure there's probably a mix of that in there somewhere.
Oh, I imagine so. But that's it. That's not what's causing these flashbacks, really.
No,
so,
this is very much live action.
It's now memories, as Mike calls it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember thinking as well, I'm skipping ahead here, sorry, but it made me think, you know, when we were told that there were spoilers that Joyce and Elle and Jonathan and Will had left Hawkins before season 4, a lot of us, including myself...
Well, we see that happening in season 3.
Yeah, sorry, of course. That's what I mean. We didn't know where they were going, but we knew that they were leaving. I remember a lot of us thinking that they were going to go somewhere like Maine, like Bob had suggested.
Yeah. It wouldn't have surprised me if they did.
Because that's it, in season... Like, even in season 3, you know, Joyce has not forgotten about Bob. You know, there's the photo on the fridge. She thinks about him and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I really was expecting her to go somewhere like Maine. I was quite surprised it was California.
I think it was Sam that set them up there, though, wasn't it?
I was going to say that was until you know that Sam knows where Elle is and things like that. So it obviously was outside agencies, if you will, setting that up. But yeah. It just makes me so sad because he had all these plans with Joyce.
He just wanted the best for Joyce.
Yeah.
And her two boys.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't really thinking of himself, really, I don't think.
No.
He just absolutely wanted the best for Joyce and her family. And, like, hear me out, I love Jopper as much as the next guy.
Yeah.
But Bob was far superior for Joyce.
Yeah, I was rooting for Bob and Joyce. Even though I love Hopper, I was rooting for them so much.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, season 3 Hopper is an absolute joke.
Yeah.
Season 4... he's locked away in a Russian prison for most of the season.
Yeah.
So season 5, if they can, you know, if they can build him up a bit and make him better as a person, more like the season 1 and 2 Hopper we knew.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Then, you know, Jopper can easily win. And as I say, I am all for it.
Yeah, and I'm not saying Joyce is perfect by any means, but Bob deserved Joyce and Joyce deserved Bob. You know what I mean?
Exactly,
Like we said, the way kind of Hopper is portrayed in season 3 especially, he didn't deserve Joyce in season 3.
No, he did not.
It would have been quite a hostile relationship.
It was very hostile.
Had like red flags, you know.
He was a red flag through season 3, and it didn't matter whether it was Joyce or laughing about Elle being upset.
Yeah.
He was a joke.
But we will most certainly get on to season three before we know it.
I know. I am looking forward to it, believe it or not.
I know we said this in part one, and yeah, I am really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to breaking it down.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is it. Like, I've said many times before, between season one and two, I can't pick a favourite between them.
No.
I love them both because I watched them straight through. They're not like one season to me, but how else can I describe it?
Yeah.
When that's what it's basically like.
It almost is like part one of Stranger Things, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And then season three and season four are like part two. Like,
well, I would say season three is like a part
on
two.
Its own.
And then, yeah, season four is like a proper part three.
Yes.
Where they're like, okay, season three was just us getting drunk on money and having a bit of fun because it's 1985. That's the 80s year that people remember all the neon lights and all the partying and all of that.
We say that as if we were born.
I'm just going off what I see on the internet.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. They were definitely drunk on the money, I think, that season two earned them. And then when they, I hope they saw the reaction of us as their, not us personally, that would be fantastic, but more so some loyal fans, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, some of the fandom being like, whoa, first of all, what the hell? You've pretty much spoilt the entire season before it released.
Yes.
And after that, yeah, once it came out, we were just like, nobody is their character. They're so out of character.
Yeah. But that's it. A lot of loyal fans did love season three.
This is the thing. Season
three, I know of many that did.
The numbers were skyrocketing for season three. Yeah. So then, on the other hand, they'd be like, oh yeah, it was the best season, let's do that again. But they didn't. Season four had its quirks as well, but it definitely went back to the roots.
Yeah, it definitely did.
And I really want to believe them about season five being as if season one and season four had a baby and then that baby is on steroids.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it will be. They have to give it everything.
They do.
It's their final chance, if you know what I mean.
They have
to give it everything.
Well, that's it. I do wonder what these spin-offs and all that are going to be like. Mm. But they've rumoured.
I hope we do get them. It will be exciting. But at the same time, I don't want them to keep milking the cow, you know.
This is it, yeah. I don't want it to be spin-offs for the sake of spin-offs.
Yeah, like, they've got to be good.
It kind of makes me think of what's going on with Star Wars at the moment. And don't get me wrong, so
funnily
far,
enough, I was thinking Marvel as a whole, actually.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
With all the
Well,
the
thing is, it's Disney that owns Star Wars now. But yeah, they also have Marvel, don't they?
So, yeah. Disney.
Disney. But yeah, most of the Star Wars stuff has been good.
Yeah.
But then there are some that I'm just like, really?
Yeah, there's been some I couldn't get into. Yeah. And to be honest, some of the Marvel kind of spin-offs that I haven't been able to get into as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And
that's it.
I don't want that to happen to Stranger Things.
That's my point. That's where I'm going with this whole thing about Disney. It was always going to be related. I'm not completely nuts.
Just a little bit.
I'm nuts.
Just a little peanut.
No, I'm nuts.
So, next on the list is the boys meeting up with Max.
Well, more so her petrifying the living crapoli out of them.
Yes. I was going to say, Mike not so much knowing what's going to happen, but really none of them know what's about to happen, which is evident from Lucas's iconic scream.
I would call it more of a squeal. But, yes, that.
So, everyone knows what we're talking about. This is, obviously, Max jumping out at the boys, dressed like Michael Myers from Halloween. And, yeah, Lucas's absolutely iconic screech, which is just brilliant.
I'm so tempted to edit in his screech into this bit.
You should try. I think you should.
I'll do it.
Because I want to know, was that just something like, has Caleb naturally screamed like that and then they've been like, oh my God, Caleb, with your voice breaking and stuff, we need you to do that,
please. We need
please.
To use that while we can.
Yeah.
I feel like I can remember it being mentioned in interviews.
I that's it. I feel like I need the backstory to the scream.
Yeah, I'm making this up from memory. of watching interviews straight after watching season two.
Yeah.
So these are cobwebs at the back of my head. But I'm sure I remember them asking Caleb about that at some point, and he said it is him doing that. It's not, like, fake.
Yeah.
Or anything. I don't know how it came about, but he just... I think they set out the scene as it was, so that they were getting jump scared by Max.
Yeah.
And then he let that out.
Oh.
And they were just like, brilliant. What the hell was that?
Well, that was
I think that's how it went. I'm sure if I'm wrong, I imagine we'll get corrected, but I'm sure that's how that went.
It was so iconic, though, that they got in to do it again in season three, didn't they? With Justin and the... What is it, like pepper spray or something like
no,
that?
No, it's the Farrah Fawcett's hairspray.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. Ooh. Silly me.
Might as well be pepper spray, though, I'm sure.
Oh, God, yeah. Stung either way. But, yeah, that moment is just so funny. Until, of course, we see Mike's face. He has not been informed that Max is joining them. And he's incredibly, shall we say, grumpy.
He's very salty.
Yeah, massively so. He is not at all impressed that this girl... I wonder what annoys him more. Is it the fact that it's this girl that he feels is replacing Elle that's joining them? Or is it the fact that the boys didn't ask him?
I really think it's a mix of both.
Yeah.
So I think the most important factor is the fact that he is obviously really missing Elle.
Yeah.
Like, that's his whole personality this season. This season is like a big cry for help from Mike.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's it. He's been getting in trouble. He's been cutting out teachers, plagiarising essays, all of that. He's in desperate need of help. And
absolutely.
That's all because of Elle being missing. If Elle was there, none of this would be the case. And I feel like if Elle was there, I think he'd be annoyed about not being asked, but I don't think he'd take it this seriously.
Yeah.
I think this is like a final nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, he's already annoyed that these boys... I don't think they've mentioned Elle once so far.
No, they haven't.
No. So Dustin and Lucas have not mentioned Elle even once so far. And then this new girl comes along and they're completely head over heels for her.
Yeah.
Just, again, seemingly forgetting Gale ever existed and just chasing this girl. And... yeah, I think when then they're like, oh yeah, she's part of the party now, and he's like, well, who asks me? I feel like he feels like he's being left out as well.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, I'm not excusing the way he treats Max this season,
not
because
at all.
It's not right, and it always makes me grumpy, ironically, that we never got a scene where he apologises to Max.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I've written
they
it
seem
fiction.
To be on better terms
yeah.
in season three, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, well,
half not
and half.
Really. So I don't think that apology ever really came.
No, I think they're better off until Elle comes up to Max when she's skateboarding and says, Mike hasn't showed up, blah, blah, blah. And of course, Max, having lived through the men in her life, just jumps to the conclusion that Mike's a piece of crap.
But also, you've got to remember, she was treated like a piece of crap by Mike in season two.
Yes, indeed.
So her only impression of Mike is that.
I mean, the thing is, though, when it comes to Elle, surely she's seen how literally obsessed he is over her. And you'd hope that she would get
possibly,
that. But
I mean, I'm really looking forward to dissecting that aspect of season three a lot. Because not many people stick up for Max. And as you know, I'm absolutely besotted with Malevin. But
yes.
I think you'll find that I do have a lot of points to stick up for Max.
Yeah.
Because I've got a similar background to her.
Yeah,
so
and I think...
I'm looking forward to dissecting that.
Yeah, and I think Runaway Max is such an important book.
Yeah.
Again, I can't remember if they consider it canon. Which I would hope they do, because it's such a good backstory for Max.
Yeah.
That really adds to the reasoning behind the way she is.
But
in
I
the
also
show.
Think... for anyone who's had a similar background to Max, if you've read Runaway Max or not, you get it on a different level.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to dissecting all of that about Max. But yeah, I think like the way he is in this season, Mike is over the top with Max, the way he treats her.
Yeah.
And it would surely have only took maybe Lucas or Dustin or Will or even Max to be like, what the hell's going on? Because this isn't about Max.
This is it.
And then it would have unravelled, because that's it. The way he treats her is not great, but it's not about her.
No, that's the thing. And that's just what really frustrates me with Dustin and Lucas this season, is they should know that Mike is not being normal compared to what he usually is like. So the problem is, it's literally been nearly a year since Elle disappeared. So maybe they have spoken about her. Maybe they have tried to help him.
I'm sure they probably have.
I would hope so, but
I'm sure in the beginning they were probably looking with Mike.
I would hope so.
But I think that all Mike needs is validation. And I think all he really needed at this point, in my opinion, is for Lucas and Dustin to say, you know, when they were saying about Max, but saying, but Mike, don't worry, we're not replacing Elle. That's nothing to do with Elle.
Honestly,
I think he just needed that validation to know that his insecurities, you know, like, it's okay. No one's trying to replace Elle. We haven't forgotten about her. Don't worry. We just think that this girl would also be another good addition to the party, not a replacement.
And yeah, that's it. It's all he needs is that conversation. He just, yeah, even if they have spoken about it and tried to help him previously before season two starts, he needs that right now.
Yeah,
he just needs 1, 2, 3 of them to just be like, listen, we know you miss Elle, we miss her too, we're not replacing her, but we really like this girl
and we're adding her to the party,
so we'd like to add her to the party. And that's that's it.
And I honestly think that that would have appealed, if they'd approached it in that way, I feel like that would have appealed to Mike's fluffy, soft side, where he'd be thinking to himself, yes, when Elle gets back, she's going to have a female friend, and that'll be really good for her.
Yeah, exactly.
That's... like, he would have had that kind of, like, yeah, because she's going to come back, and she's going to have us, but she's also going to have a female friend as well, and that'll be brilliant. And, you know, I honestly think it would have been like more like that.
Exactly, that's it. But it's as if once Max shows up, Dustin and Lucas just essentially forget about Mike as well.
Yeah.
Nearly. And I can't blame him for being pissed off.
No. And I mean,
I do not like the way he treats Max at all. That, you know, he's a bit of an a-hole. He is an a-hole to Max.
Yeah.
For sure. But I get it from his point of view as well.
But it's, I think even like Will, Will says, you know, like when Mike is saying to him, you know, oh, they should have asked me and all this kind of stuff, and Will said, oh, I just assumed you'd be okay about it.
Like, that's a bit of a silly assumption.
That's a really silly assumption. Like, if you've been watching your best, I know. I mean, do not get me wrong. Will's probably got warrant above anyone else to have been distracted because of what he's going through.
Yeah.
But it just seemed like a comment of not really knowing what Mike's been going through himself in the last year, to think that he would just be okay about that.
That's it. I mean, it's like these two get each other so much in this season.
They do.
But that's one failing point of Will. Like, that's it. Obviously, Will's got PTSD, but in this season, so has Mike.
Yes.
Like, Mike is showing more signs of PTSD than Will in this season, really. Like, you know, he's completely not himself. He's grumpy. He's lashing out.
He's acting out of character.
Yeah, he is showing all the signs of PTSD, while Will's managing to disguise it quite a bit.
Yeah.
So the fact that nobody just takes a moment to say, whoa, Mike, are you okay?
Yeah.
Like, if it was his parents, they wouldn't know about Elle, but if it was either of the boys, we know Elle's missing, we know you miss her, but how can we help?
Yeah.
Like, that's all he needs. It's just a moment of help. But no, he's pretty much just left alone in missing Elle. So as much as I hate the way he treats Max, I can't really blame him.
Yeah. It's a difficult situation, definitely. But I do think that people need to not forget how Max is treated in season two, because it does relate to how she acts in season three.
Yeah, and that's it. I didn't want to ramble on about season three, but all I will say with that is, yeah, as the season starts, they seem to be okay. Mm. Like, you know, as Mike and Ella clinging onto each other. Well, no, sorry. As they go into Start Court, mm. and Mike's late.
Mm.
And he's like, oh, sorry, I wanted to spend some romantic time with my girlfriend.
Mm.
And they're like, oh, I'm spending some romantic time with my girlfriend, and blah, blah, blah. They're all teasing Mike, and Max says, I think it's cute.
Yeah.
Doesn't she? So she's all for them at this point. And then that's it. As soon as Elle says Mike has done something wrong
yeah.
at all, she goes from 0 to 100 immediately.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's an immediate turning point.
Yeah.
Back to the way they were with each other.
Yeah. And that's it. We will go into all of that, obviously, as we get into season three. But yeah, definitely the events of season two do massively impact certain stuff in season three, you know. So obviously what happens next is a huge moment. Will, bless him, first of all, is harassed by some teenagers shouting zombie boy.
Yeah.
And he falls over, which is horrible. And then obviously he then is suddenly within the Upside Down. I do wonder what he must have looked like in the normal Hawkins at that point. Like,
yeah,
I don't think it's like a season four situation where his eyes are funny and he's, you know, I don't know, really.
I'm trying to, what comes to my mind is just after the jib scene where Elle's watched Mike and Max, ironically, in the school gym. Yeah. And then Will runs out because he's being chased by the Mind Flayer.
Mm-hmm.
When he's frozen in the school grounds,
yeah,
his eyes, they're not glazed over, but they're rolled back.
Mm.
I don't think they would be in this case.
But he moves as well, because he goes from being in the middle of the
This is it, yeah. That's why I don't think that would be the case right here.
Yeah.
I don't know. His eyes would definitely be like, you know what someone looks like when they're staring into the distance.
Yeah. Just
thinking about something, not really focusing.
Glazed over, but
yeah,
I suppose his eyes roll back in that particular scene because at that moment he's being engulfed by the shadow.
That's true.
It's going
yeah.
within him.
That's true, because he does run to that position first.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think he must run, but he's just like, yeah, like glazed over. He's not there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. You can probably tell if you looked at him.
Yeah, but that is a scary scene because, you know, it's no longer like in earlier in the episode where he just sees it in the background and it emerges in the distance.
Yeah.
It's clocked him and it is after him,
yeah.
which is really scary.
It is. This massive thing.
Yeah.
That pretty much owns the Upside Down.
Yeah.
Is just fixated on him.
Yes.
No. Yeah. You'd be panicking.
Absolutely. And it literally chases him. And if it isn't for Mike, he would have been possessed at this point. You
probably,
know?
Yeah. Probably it would have straight away got him.
Yeah.
I think.
And, you know, Mike's able to bring it forward. And Mike's obviously incredibly panicked as to Will's appearance of, he's completely shaken up.
Yeah.
And, you know, the boys and Max are like, you know, is he okay? And Mike just loses his temper. He's had enough at this point. It's been a long day.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, screw it. I'm taking him home.
I'm bored anyway,
you know. And this is it. He then goes on to, you know, what's been a horrible scene here, really, to, again, another wholesome scene of Mike and Will talking.
Yeah, crazy together.
Crazy together. And honestly, I know that it's probably scenes like this that set sail the Byler ship, the Mike and Will
this
ship.
This is probably the one that stands out the most for Bylers.
But I'm sorry to Byler fans, but for me personally, this is a lovely scene of two best friends finally being honest with each other.
Yeah, and that's it. If anything, Mike's mentioning Elle here.
Yeah.
So
he's finally being honest about how much he misses L, and it's, yeah, this is the thing, like, they're talking about the shadow monster. Will is finally being honest about what he has seen, and that he doesn't want to talk to someone else about it. He clearly does know to an extent now that Mike is going through something, because he feels like he can confide in him.
Yeah.
And he's trying to explain it, and he's like, oh, like, you know, people wouldn't understand. And then Mike says,
Elwood,
yeah. And
she always did.
She always did. And Will, thankfully, thank God for Will in this moment, listens to him and is like, yeah? And
yeah, he has no reason to hate Elle at the moment.
No. Well, he never had a reason to hate Elle, but that's just my opinion.
That's just the Duffers doing what they do worst.
Oh, Duffers. But yeah, he listens to Mike, and Mike has that, bless him, that longing, that sad smile as he thinks about Elle, and he thinks he can, sometimes he thinks he can see her, but she's not there, and oh, it's heartbreaking.
But yes, she is, Mike.
She is there, and
just believe yourself for a bit. Let that feeling stand out, because yeah, she is there. She's with you.
And that's it. It's like, I do wish, after that scene, obviously before Will is possessed, because bless him, he's a bit busy then, but before he's possessed, I wish he could have spoken to Dustin and Lucas and been like, guys, just lay off Mike a bit. He's really struggling missing Elle.
Yeah.
Like, I wish there had been that.
I think they would take it very seriously from Will, considering he's never met Elle.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's it. If he went up to them and said, listen, he's like this because he really misses Elle, like, seriously misses her.
Yeah.
Then I think, yeah, they'd realise how serious it is.
Yeah.
Because, as I say, Will's never met her, so for him to be saying that...
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, that's it. Like we said, that we've got the classic line of crazy together, because they both feel like they are losing their minds in their separate ways.
That's it, you would. And I mean, I understand Mike's lack of belief in what he feels when he feels like he can see her, or
yeah,
sense her in a way, because he's never been on a receiving end of Elle visiting someone in the void.
No.
Until now. And, you know, he hasn't then got confirmation from Elle that it is her watching him. So yeah, he will just think he's going crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. It started from the day he saw her through the window while he's being interrogated.
Yeah.
He's probably going to think that was him going crazy, and now it's just constant.
And this is it. I feel like from this moment of the season, it was always going to be a strong friendship bond between Will and Mike going forward, because they have both confided in each other, something that they're both very vulnerable about.
Yeah.
About exactly. Missing Elle, and of course everything that Will is going through. They've got like a shared trauma.
Yeah, that's it, because the thing is with Will and Mike, what Will absolutely loves about Mike here is that he doesn't treat him like a baby.
Yeah.
That is, in my opinion, the biggest thing about Mike to Will, is that he just listens to him. He just lets him talk, lets him get it out of off his chest.
Yeah.
And tries to help in a way without babying him, without just being like, oh, I'm just going to stick with you constantly.
That's it, because for better or for worse, Mike is listening to Will's concerns, but he's not going to Joyce about them. He's being there for Will. He continues to be there for Will and is concerned for Will. But he's not like, you need to go speak to the doctors in the lab. You need to go to the lab. Right, you best stay off school. You know, like, he's not like that.
Yeah,
which exactly is what Will doesn't want. He doesn't want to feel caged in or anything like that.
That's it, yeah. He's feeling very overcrowded.
Yeah.
Just very watched.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't get a moment's peace, really. And then Mike is essentially a rest from all that.
Yeah. And that's it. I'm so glad that they do have each other. But yeah, I was going to skip ahead to season 4, but...
Yeah, well, I was going to say, it's a shame the way things go.
Yes.
With Will.
And by that, would you not mean his sexuality whatsoever?
No, God, no.
We mean...
That was obvious from day one.
Oh, God, yeah. It's a shame to we feel that it has to be Mike he's in love with, because this just...
Well,
that's my opinion. It's a shame it has to be Mike he's in love with, because it's going to end up in heartbreak for someone.
Yeah.
And I feel it's going to end up in heartbreak for Will.
Well, it's already ended up in heartbreak, that
yeah.
scene where he's crying in the car.
And that makes me so sad, because, you know, I feel like they could have had such an amazing storyline of Will and his sexuality, and almost like with Elle, I feel like they would have got on so well because of their shared trauma and the amount of time she has saved his life.
That's the one thing that I'm pissed off by, is the fact that we didn't get that friendship between these two, which would have just made so much sense.
And then I feel like if anyone was going to then be insecure, it would be Mike thinking, oh my God, they've got all this shared experience, they've got all this, they're going to fall in love. And then for him to speak to Will and Will to...
You know, basically like, laugh in his face like Mike.
Well, not even laugh in his face, but have a genuinely, again, vulnerable, not laugh in his face, like, where he's like, I'm gay, Mike.
That's what I mean. Like a laugh of a, my God, you don't know.
Yeah.
I thought you would have known. Like, you know me the best.
Yeah.
I thought you would have known that I'm gay.
I was hoping, I mean, obviously in season 3 he does go, it's not my fault you don't like girls, but I would have preferred something like that.
Yeah,
and then it. Mike being like, you know, it doesn't change anything, you know, like if Will's like, you know, I can understand if you don't want to be my friend now and all this, and Mike being like, what are you talking about, you know, you'll always be my best friend, and
that's it. Yeah, but from the not my fault you don't like girls scene, I feel like Mike knows.
Yeah,
because they both, as soon as he says that, they both just freeze. Like a crap, I didn't mean it in that way, but sort of thing. So I think it'd be silly to think Mike doesn't know, at least in season 3. But in terms of Will being in love with Mike, yes, it's a shame, because that's it, in season 4 it has ended in heartbreak, but it also makes sense to me. Like you said, this crazy together scene sets up the Byler ship.
Yeah.
And I think on Will's side, I think that's already setting in from now, probably beforehand as well. So Will liking Mike makes sense to me. And yes, it's a shame that Will has to go through that heartbreak, but I feel like that probably will make Will such a stronger character anyway as well.
I hope so, but it just makes me sad, because it's like, will he tell Mike? And if he does, is it going to affect their friendship? Because I know they might be like, oh no, of course it won't, but surely it would. If one of you is seeing the other like a brother, and then the other one says that they're in love with you, you know, that is going to affect a friendship. And then the alternative to that is Will never telling Mike, which is also terrible for Will. I just feel for him so much. Like, I feel like he's never given a break,
ever. I feel like Will really just needs to find someone, and then he'll be okay. The whole thing of not telling Mike, I don't know. I think he could probably live with it if he has someone else.
I just think they've written a really messy situation.
Unfortunately, that especially in that era, it's pretty much what it was.
I know, but it just, that's it. Like, it would be a messy situation in the 80s, no matter who he was in love with, but it just makes me so frustrated that it has to be Mike.
Yeah, but do you see what I mean in terms of it making sense?
It does make sense, but it just frustrates me, because I just want Will to be happy as much as I want Malevin to be happy.
Yeah, and that's it. We know for a fact Malevin are happy together.
Yeah.
And I hope that's the way it stays. Hear me, Duffers. I will be at your door with pitchforks. But
we will find where you live.
We will find you.
And we will make you change your script. If there's anything but...
I can't picture the correct person anymore. Do you know who I'm picturing as I say that?
Are you thinking of Martin Lewis?
I am.
Anyone who is not from the UK won't get that, but...
It can stay as an inside joke.
Yeah, but everyone else will be thinking of Taken, which is the joke that Martin Lewis takes. So if you can imagine the Taken speech. If you can imagine the Liam Neeson Taken scene, the phone call, then you're not far off at all.
I'm sure if you Google Martin Lewis Taken, you'll probably find it.
So in all of this, the next scene is quite amusing. We have got Hopper. So Hopper has been going to all these pumpkin patches, looking at all these infested pumpkins, clearly worrying, especially when at one point he touches the tree and it is slimy and it is clearly giving him flashbacks to the Upside Down.
Yeah.
And he's not alone.
Bang. You're dead.
You're dead. There's a little boy. And I genuinely can't remember if Danny is the name of the actor or the character. But that is the only name I have for him in my head. That little boy dressed as like a cowboy on Halloween who is completely tormenting the chief of police.
I will pause and find out if that's a character or an actor name.
Okay.
Okay, so, no, Danny is the actor name. Season 2, he's credited as Grand Kid. And then Season 3, Episode 7, he's credited as Little Boy.
Little Boy. But this is it. Something I love about Stranger Things. If they find a good actor, even if they are just meant to be like an extra, they'll use them again.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Even as an extra, if you stand out... then
in a good way.
yeah not stand out as a, my god, they're a pain in the ass to work with.
Yeah,
no, if you stand out in a good way, they're gonna utilize you.
Yeah, definitely. And that's it, he is a brilliant little actor, Danny, and he was just so comedic.
Yeah,
like, you're dead. And then Hopper's like, oh, happy Halloween, and then realizes how late he is, yes, to get to Elle.
That's it.
He'd promised her he'd be there by 5:15.
Yeah, and he is off, speeding away. But then as he gets down the road, I think it suddenly hits him. Wait a minute. I'm going to need something to apologise here.
I've got no candy, so, and I promised candy.
Yeah, so he slaps that thing into reverse. Spin no wheels. Hey, kid, give me some of that candy.
No way.
Picture a couple of dollar bills. What about now?
It is. It's a brilliant little scene. But
again, we've mentioned it before. Comedy that isn't forced.
Yes, that's our favourite.
That's the kind of comedy we want.
That's it, because when you think about the script would have just said, like, bang, you're dead. Or... no way. You know, that's all down to the actor to
it's
really get
it. It's all down
that
to the actors,
no,
and the way,
way
they deliver it. And I suppose some of it's going to be the director as well.
Yeah.
But the actors are the one who brings it to life.
That's it. The directors, yeah, they do hope for things to be delivered in a certain way, but you've still got to have that actor who can deliver it.
Exactly, that's it. If you've got rubbish actors, doesn't matter how good your director is, they ain't going to get the scene out right.
Yeah,
but,
and that's
nope.
It, and like... Hopper, obviously, as he's getting to Elle, via Morse code on the radio,
yes,
says late. But Elle's had enough at this point.
I think that's it. This is like a... well, this isn't the final straw for Elle, but it's getting there.
It's getting there. And we don't know how many times this has happened. We don't know potentially how many things... Hopper has promised or has said, you know, like, yeah, I'll be back at this time.
And that's the problem. Hopper really somehow, even after 353 odd days, still doesn't understand how serious a promise is to Elle.
Yeah. And these are like really heavy scenes. They're hard to watch because you know how lonely she is, how bored she is, and how she will hold on to anything good. And he has promised her something that sounds exciting, you know, watching a movie, having a laugh together, eating candy until they feel sick. You know, that's an exciting prospect compared to what she's used to, which is just being on her own, being lonely, feeling sad as she watches Mike in the void every single night.
Yeah, and that's it. She's going to be watching that clock as it approaches 5:15.
Yeah.
And then as soon as it ticks and he's not there, she's going to be like, throw herself on the sofa like, okay, fine. Back to normal.
Just really upsets me, it does. And this is it. They both have rage. They do.
Yes, and they do.
Hopper gets to the cabin and, you know, he does the secret knock and Elle doesn't let him in for a while, which is understandable.
Yeah.
And Hopper does get quite angry as well and says he's going to freeze out there.
I mean, kind of scary to think that he literally does rely on Elle opening that door.
Yeah,
it is. He hasn't got a backup.
I know, because I was thinking that as well. I was thinking, what if she has been taken or something?
Yeah, what if she's taken? What if...
I mean, he'd find a way to get in. He's got a gun at the end of the day, but...
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, how strong are those locks? He could probably just kick that door down.
Mm.
I know there's multiple, but yeah, I think if he really needed to.
Yeah, yeah. Or break a window or something. He would have an alternative, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But you know, he gets quite irate quite quickly and it's like, come on, I'm going to freeze out here. And she lets him in, you know, but she does not come out of her room. And it's difficult because I said to you, didn't I, when we were watching it, I completely get why Elle is angry. I get it 100%. But I just wish she could have, I don't know. Like, after he says, because he goes to the door and he's genuine when he says, I got held up and I'm sorry.
Yeah, he
says it in a gentle voice.
He is definitely genuine. He means it here.
Yeah.
The problem is how many times
has
he meant it?
And I completely agree with that. But I just wish that she had opened that door, because I know he would have had a smile in. Like, they would have watched a horror movie. They would have eaten the candy. You know, they would have had what he promised just later on in the evening.
Yes.
And it does make me sad, because obviously they both then missed out on that. But he knows he's in the wrong. Like, he goes and sits on the sofa. He says he's going to eat all the candy to try and appease her out of the room.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. And he doesn't eat the candy. He shoves it to the side. And you can tell he's frustrated.
Yeah, I think he's frustrated. And I don't... He definitely doesn't like letting her down, because...
No, he doesn't.
I think... Despite how serious he is in keeping her safe and making sure she never leaves,
yeah,
I think deep down he feels guilty for that.
Yeah.
And so he's trying his best to give her the best while she's all pent up and literally alone and bored. And he's failing to meet his promises here. So I feel like he's feeling frustrated with himself.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. He's definitely not treating her like she's in trouble here.
No.
He's not like, open that door right now or you're grounded.
Yeah. And honestly, like, again, my personal opinion, but more so because of the scene, we haven't actually seen it yet, but it's a flashback, you know, when he plays the Don't Mess Around with Jim and they move to the cabin and they do it up and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The way he is with her there, the way he smiles at her kindly and lovingly, I do think already at this point, if he knows it or not, I think he does love her like a daughter.
Straight away, I think
I really
so, yeah.
think he does. And yes, we all know we've got some angry scenes to come and all that kind of stuff. But I do think already at this point, he does love her like a daughter. And
he does.
That frustration of him sitting there, like you said, I think he does know he has let her down. And he feels like any father would feel letting down their child.
Yeah, that's it. I think he definitely does love her as a daughter, because, you know, that he is so dead serious on keeping her safe.
Yeah.
Even if that means she can't see anyone and she's literally alone for, God, who knows how long it would have been if it weren't for the events of season two.
He's like Joyce on steroids, ironically.
He really is. He doesn't realise it, but he is 10 times worse than Joyce. And I get it.
We get it, because he's actually lost a daughter.
He's lost a daughter, but as well as that, he's had the lab are looking for her.
Yes.
You know, they're looking for her. They're not looking for Will.
They're trying to, ironically, help Will to an extent.
Exactly, that's it. So, you know, I get it from his point of view. I just, again, it's another case of wishing he could have just found a way to at least let Mike in, because the thing is, Mike wants exactly the same.
Yeah.
He is exactly the same in that hell's the most important thing in the world to him.
Yeah.
So these two men, boys, whatever, they want the same thing.
They're clashing over the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. They both want the utmost safety for
yeah.
L.
Yeah.
They just needed to team up and things would have gone so much more smoothly.
And I'm not going to go completely again into season three because we have talked about it so much in this episode.
I know, we're not going to have anything to talk about season three when we actually start watching it.
But all I will just very quickly say is that I do think, again, saying about things happening in season two that affect season three, I 100% think that Mike's bitterness to Hopper in season three is directly linked to everything that happens in season two.
100%. He is definitely very annoyed at the fact that she was alive and safe.
Yeah.
So close, yet so far for that entire year, and he literally was, like I said, going through PTSD, literally not sure if she was alive.
Yeah.
Feel like he was seeing her in the corner of the eye going nuts. He was literally losing his mind.
Yeah.
And all Hopper had to do is just say, she's fine.
Yeah, or she's safe, or anything.
She's safe.
I can't tell you anything else.
Even if Hopper didn't want to let Mike in to her life at this point, even if he was like, listen, I can't let you see her because it's not safe, just tell him that she's fine, and that would have helped so much. Or even
saying, listen, you know, she's safe, I can't tell you anything else except for when you talk to her, she is listening.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
I was just going to say exactly that. He so easily could have just pulled Mike to the side at some point. Could have found somewhere to just... The thing is, Mike's been going to him to ask. We know that.
Yeah.
He's been going to the police station to ask Hopper if she's okay. And all he needed to do...
And the reason we know that is the echoes.
Yeah.
Hopper didn't know about the echoes.
Exactly. So, and we know, I'm sure Hopper at some point mentions that Mike has been going even after the echoes. I'm sure there's something. I hope I'm not thinking of a fanfic here.
I think you're thinking of a fanfic. Because, like, I know I have, and other people have written, like, Mike going to the police station and, you know, being like, she really likes echoes and this and that.
Yeah. No, but I mean, even after that, like, he's going back multiple times through the year.
I've never seen any mention of that in the show.
I must be thinking of a fic then. I've said before I have that problem here. Some fics are so damn good that they do just blur into my mind and become canon.
Yep.
And sometimes I wish I could make that a reality, but hey ho. Okay, but surely that has to be true, that Mike's going to be popping in
100%.
Multiple times over the year, just asking, have you seen any signs? Have 100%. You heard anything?
And the reason, and the proof of that, fan fiction or not, is the Mike and Hopper scene.
Yeah.
When
exactly?
Mike finds out he's that Elle's alive
you
and safe.
Liar.
Yes.
So he's been lied to. It's not where he hasn't been asking and Hopper hasn't said anything.
And when Hopper's like, I was just trying to keep her safe. And so yeah, they clearly, this is not the first time they've talked about this.
No, exactly. So that's it. One of those times that Mike went to the police station to ask for her, he just needed to say, yes, she's safe. I can't say anything, but exactly like you just said, she is listening. She's watching you in the void. And every time you've called her on that radio, she has been listening.
I mean, the only thing that scares me...
Although, Mike, you don't need the radio. Stop letting a lab listen to you.
This is it. I was going to say, we say all this stuff and I feel really passionate about it. And then I get a little worry in my chest and I'm like, oh, but the lab are listening, you know?
Yeah. But this is it.
So you don't want Mike to go on to the Supercom and be like, I spoke to Hopper today and he said you're safe.
Yeah.
You know, and that you can hear me.
What Mike needs to realise is that radio isn't needed.
No.
The radio isn't what helps her listen to you.
It's more her end than his end.
Yeah.
She's got the TV going, you know, with the static.
Well, that just helps her focus. That's just sensory. She doesn't need the TV to see him. She can do it without, but it just helps her clear her mind.
Yeah.
But that's it. She doesn't need the TV. He doesn't need the radio. Without the radio, then, yes, the house has been bugged, but I don't think there's anything in the basement that's going to be listening to him.
Mm. But that is where she was kept, so hard
to know. Who knows? I can't remember the bugging scene. It kind of goes really quick.
Yeah.
That whole bugging scene. So that's... Yeah. It's a problem of how... Again, I think Hopper would just pretty much have to be like, listen, she's alive, she's listening, but just in case you're being listened to, just in case you're being listened to, don't go making it obvious when you're talking, okay?
Just
know she's safe. Yeah. You don't have to go as crazy as you've been going. Yeah. Because I think that what annoys me even more, and I know I'm rambling so much right now, but it really drives me crazy how long everyone just leaves Mike losing his mind, is that Elle is literally telling Hopper how crazy Mike's going.
Mm.
You know, every time Hopper knows she's listening to him, and we know that from a future scene with them, and she's saying, oh, he says he needs me and all of that. That's not going to be the first time she's ever said that. So surely Hopper knows how loopy Mike's going, and yet he's just like, yeah, he can lose his mind. I don't care.
I know. It seems like Elle is, and to a small extent Will, but obviously he's going to be distracted very soon. It seems that Elle is the only one kind of advocating for Mike in this season.
Literally is the only one. I know Will's obviously listening to him. They're kind of acting as each other's therapist.
Yes.
But
obviously things are going to change very soon for Will.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. And other than Will, the only one who knows what Mike is going through is Elle.
And that is a perfect segue into the next scene, which we said on the last episode, we might need to flavour your water to get you through this moment. But seeing as we don't drink alcohol, we need to spice up our life, because it's a really, really beautiful and heartbreaking scene. And that is obviously Mike, you know, he is speaking out to Elle again. It's day 353. And Mike is yet again speaking out to Elle. And we see it from her perspective in the void, like what she can see. And it's just so heartbreaking, isn't it?
It is, because Elle so desperately wants to reveal herself,
yeah,
in a sense.
Yeah.
She desperately wants to just give him a sign.
Yes.
That she's there. She's safe. He can stop losing his mind. Like I was just rambling on for about an hour. She really wants to help him know that she's safe.
Yeah. And I think this scene, she's more determined than ever, because, well, I was going to say she reaches out for him, but I shouldn't really skip to that bit first, because it's not long after that the scene ends. But yeah. He says, you know, to her that he's had a really bad day today.
Yeah.
And that he wishes she was there. And my God, that poor girl is thinking, same.
So do I.
Yeah. She's thinking, I've also had a really bad day and I wish I was there too. I desperately tried. And it's just so sad, because, like we've said before in the last episode, he's clearly talked to her in the void about what he was going to wear for Halloween and being excited for Halloween. And she has tried so hard to be there and to be the ghost and all this kind of stuff.
She's been picking at every little opportunity that could have let her out of the cabin and to group back up with them.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. As desperate as I'm saying Mike is, she is just as desperate.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, another A star for Finn and Millie's facial expressions and the way that she's looking at him, listening to him. And then as she does go to touch his cheek, he looks up and...
He looks up when she says his name.
Yeah.
She says his name and he pretty much hears it in his head, I guess.
Yeah.
And he's looking directly at her.
He is.
But as soon as he's looking at her, it flicks to his point of view.
And it's such a shame he's had such a bad day, because I do think if it had been any other day, he probably would have been a bit more patient and
yeah,
waited.
I think he would have humoured himself in believing that Elle might have been there.
Yeah.
And you could nearly imagine, if he truly thought that Elle was there, you could sort of picture him acting as if she truly was there in front of him.
Yeah.
And just start talking and all that. And it's such a shame that he can't just, for a moment, believe his instinct.
Yeah. And I do wonder what would have happened. Like, she goes to reach his cheek, but he moves away just before she touches his cheek. And I wonder what would have happened.
Yeah, I really don't know, because I've always been adamant that he would have vanished, solely because later on when Mike's in the lab with Will, she's watching, and this is just as the demo dogs are about to come through. He's trying to run and grab someone, and she runs up to him asking what's wrong.
Yeah.
Tries to grab him, and as soon as her arms go through him, vanish into dust.
Yeah.
So I don't know if touching his cheek now would have done that as well. Yeah. Or if it's because I don't know, maybe because she's not panicking.
I was going to say,
maybe she would have had a more stable connection.
Yeah, possibly. Because I know Terry, obviously, has already experienced the void and all that kind of stuff. So when she touches her and Terry literally responds and says, like, no, you know, I don't think he would have been on that level, because Terry has had a lot of experience with
it. Well, that's it. We clearly see that Terry's able to do the same thing.
Yeah, that's it. And so, yeah, he possibly would have vanished, but because she was solely focused in on him, I do like to think that at the very least he would have felt almost like a, like, I don't know, like a breeze on his cheek.
The thing is, she can definitely touch things in void space.
Yeah.
Because that's how the whole first gate opens.
Yeah.
Is touching a Demogorgon on the back.
And it turns around and looks at it, yeah.
And you can see its flesh move to that touch.
Yeah.
So if the Demogorgon can feel that, and as far as we know, they're just natural beasts. There's nothing special about the Demogorgon.
No.
Like, as far as we know. So if that can feel her prodding it on the back, I feel like, yeah, such a stable connection on one person, I feel as if I would hope that he wouldn't have vanished and he would have felt something.
Yeah. And that's it. It's like, he doesn't, unfortunately. He moves, he's given up before she even can touch his cheek, and he storms off.
And she's just watching him go, so heartbroken.
I remember, like, I could probably do it now again because I'm pregnant, but the amount of times I watched that and cried.
Yeah. Because that's it.
I just felt it all.
Nearly like he's given up and she's giving up as well.
Yeah.
Nearly. You can see her in her eyes that she doesn't want to. She just, thing is, I don't think she's giving up. I think this is the start of her thinking, right, I need to get out of here. I need to find him. I need to see him.
If anything,
he needs to see me.
Yeah, if anything, I think she's thinking he's giving up on me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and
I think
that's breaking her heart.
Yeah, I think it sets a determination. It starts the fire inside, and it's like, right, screw these rules. Not stupid. I need to see him.
Definitely. Because Millie, again, A star, like the way she watches him leave, and then even as she pulls off the blindfold and the tears down her face, she is just such a phenomenal actress.
They really both are in this season. Like,
oh, massively.
That's it. The three standouts of this season, obviously, like we keep saying, Noah, it's his season. But Millie and Finn, my God, like we say, season one and two, just...
Yeah, especially.
They never stop being amazing actors.
Yeah. And to be fair, I think Millie stands out in every single season. I really do. But yeah, this season in particular, Millie, Finn and Noah stand out so much.
They do.
And they just have that ability, especially Millie in that scene, to completely break my heart and to have me in floods of tears.
Yeah.
Because it's just so hard. And as Malevin fans, it's such a hard season to get through, but at the same time, it's one of our favourite seasons.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. You know me.
The acting is just so good. The story's so good.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, I'm not that fussed on angst, but my God, it is a favourite season of mine. But the thing is, it's so hard to go through, but then it's so rewarding.
I was just going to say that, like, final two episodes in particular kind of make up for it.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, I've been on the worst roller coaster of my life, but it was worth it.
Exactly. It really is the worst roller coaster. Like, my God, if Mike was just a little earlier running away from Max in that gym, if he could have caught her in that school, that's it.
But that's it. Even though that scene's so heartbreaking, at the same time, you see the hope in him. The minute she's like, oh, it's like something flipped my board or something.
He's immediately,
right, it's got to be Al.
Yeah, exactly. And I do
he's
wonder...
He's never given up on her.
No, not once he's given up on her. And I mean, I do wonder what he's thinking as he's holding that candlestick.
Oh, dear. Yes, the famous candlestick.
I do wonder if he's like begging Gal to get there, or if he's like, okay, she's never coming back, I'm dead now.
Yeah. Honestly, I can't wait for us to get to that scene. And for those that don't know the scene we're talking about the reunion scene.
Yeah, well, more so the buyer's house with the demodogs crowding them just before Elle does break in.
Yeah.
Like that. For some reason, the first thing Mike grabs to try and defend himself is a candlestick.
It just makes me think of Cluedo. I think it's called Clue in America. Literally, it was Mike with the candlestick in the buyer's lounge.
What are you going to do with that, Michael?
I mean, I suppose it's better than nothing.
Yeah, but come on. You might as well just let them have you.
Yeah. Be like, oh, for God's sake, here you go. Here's my arm.
Just finish me.
But speaking of demodogs and creatures of the Upside Down, the final scene is Dustin returning home.
Yes, it is.
And there's some unusual noises and quite scary rattling of the trash can. And he thinks it's Muse at first, doesn't he?
Yeah. My question is, what is it, like a fake gun? Essentially, it's like the cannon. I can't remember what they call it in Ghostbusters. I am so sorry.
Is it proton pack?
No, the proton pack squats on his back, and maybe
it is that because he lifts it from the back, doesn't he?
Okay, yeah, I suppose it's part of the proton pack, but yeah. I don't know if the actual sort of weapon part has a name to it.
I'm not
Either
sure.
way, he grabs that as if the thing's real, and I'm just like, what? What are you going to do with that? Like,
we're going from candlestick to proton
yeah,
pack.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I can't decide which is worse. Candlestick, I think this is worse.
This might be worse,
I think this is worse.
Because it's probably cardboard.
It's either cardboard or plastic, and it's attached to you. You're holding it as if it's a gun.
Yeah.
What in the name of hell are you doing, Dustin? But yeah, though he opens the trash can, we have a camera on the inside watching him, and he just looks down at us like, what the hell?
And then the episode finishes.
No, holy Ghostbusters theme.
That's it. It's like, despite all that angst, another brilliant, like, episode.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. That's it. That's what these two seasons are.
Yeah.
Just banger after banger.
There's never an episode where you're like, oh, this is a bit of a filler, or, oh, this is to tick off certain boxes.
I can hear many of you mentioning episode 7, and I will be at your doors with pitchforks.
I was thinking about this today. When we do get to episode 7, we should, first of all, explain why people think it's not a good episode, and maybe why we think
it is. I get why. It's just very awkwardly placed, but where else could it have gone?
Yeah, exactly. But no, this second episode, again, is another one where it's just like, oh my God, supreme.
Absolutely.
11 out of 11.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Everyone's
fantastic.
On top form. Everyone's acting is top form.
Yeah. Absolutely so everyone.
And it's one of those, like, we have got a lot of characters now. You know, we've got a lot of sub-storylines going on. We've got stuff with Joyce and Bob going on. We've got Nancy and Steve going on. We've got Nancy and Jonathan going on.
We've got a bit of Billy.
We've got a bit of Billy and Max. We've got Max and Lucas and Dustin. We've got the party as a whole. We've got Will's storyline. We've got Mike's storyline. We've got Elle's storyline. Hoppers. All these things. And yet, it is done so well. Everyone gets the airtime, but you don't feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, they do manage to tell all of these stories at the same time. And yet, you rarely feel rushed.
Yeah.
They somehow manage to pack them all in into about a 45-ish minute episode. If anything, the episode finishes way too quickly.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't feel rushed or packed together or anything like that. It doesn't feel like they're trying to cram so much information into a one episode.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm sure people are thinking, my God, if I had a shot for every time they've mentioned season 3, I'd be paralytic drunk by now. But I think that's one of the issues that I kind of have with season 3, is that I don't think the balance is right between all the different storylines.
Yeah, like, let's say everyone loves the Scoops Troop, but not this one here.
How dare you? It's not like I wasn't just shaking my head or anything.
But I thought you were shaking your head as a, oh God, I don't.
Yeah, I was, but I was trying to be subtle. For me, it's just, I don't think the balance is right. I feel like we had way too much of them. And I feel like we had a bit too many unnecessary scenes when we could have been having, like, we had so many moments of, like, Robin and Steve serving ice cream, or we had too many moments of them lying on the floor staring at the ceiling because the ceiling's moving, and then we had another scene where they're in the bathroom. And
ironically, the one that came to my mind is while they're in the elevator going down into the Russian underground. It's like that elevator scene is way too long.
I just thought there was too many, like the bathroom one made sense because that's when Robin announces she's gay. And, you know, like, how she, you know, she... That's a great scene because, like, the way they do it is as if she's talking about she's in love with Steve, and then it has that brilliant twist where she's like, no, it's the girl that you were looking at, you know, that she that she also fancied.
Yeah.
That made sense. But the scene of them basically just staring at the ceiling being like, whoa, it's moving, and then them being in the movie theatre... I just remember at the time thinking, I want to get back to the action. What the hell's happening with Elle?
Just like,
what's going on?
Get
with
on
the
with
main
it.
Group. Yeah. I need to know what's happening. And it's not just them. Like, I felt that there was unnecessary scenes with Hopper and Joyce. And yeah, so I felt like the balance, in my opinion, was off in season three.
They were drunk on money.
Maybe they had shots. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. They got drugged just like Steve and Robin did.
Yeah.
And season three is the season of them looking up at the ceiling like, look at all this money we've got.
I know.
Let's go nuts.
Honestly, we slate it so much. It's so bad, isn't it?
It really is, because it's a good season in so many ways. It's just got so many things wrong with it. After the hype that season 1 and 2 put us in.
Yeah.
We are obviously expecting so much from season 3, and then we get some of... I'm going to stop there. I know. No.
We must be depressing people at this point, and we're very sorry. And you know what? I think that our listeners will be quite surprised when we do get to season 3. Because we are having to break it down, I think we will actually be a lot more positive than we're currently being. I think because at the moment, we are comparing it to the season
this
we're currently
is the
in.
Problem.
As and the own... season we're currently in is superb.
Yeah, that's the problem. We're in the two best seasons at the moment.
Yes.
And then...
In our opinion.
No, it's a fact. We're in the best season.
I mean, award-wise, it is fact, really, let's be honest.
Exactly. It's got the rewards, so it's fact. And if you think otherwise, your opinion is wrong. So, yeah. And then we've built up so much expectation for season 3.
Yeah.
And we get that instead.
Yeah.
Like, as I say, there are so many brilliant elements about it. Like, yeah, the whole flare idea is genius.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the acting, like Dacre as Billy, my God.
That's it.
Millie again, bloody hell. Gave it everything.
Season three
to the point of losing her voice.
Yeah, season three belongs to Millie and Dacre.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, they hold it together and they make it what it is. But everyone else...
Not everyone else. We will dissect, and I am looking forward to it because I feel like I want my opinion to change. I want to go into it deeper.
Like, that's it. I remember the build up to season three so much.
Yeah,
like, it was, they were doing so many things.
Yes,
but I won't start rambling on about them now. That's something I need to remember to talk about on an actual season three episode.
I know. We'll get to that, and then we'll be like, oh, well, we've already talked all about season three. Let's move on to season four.
Yeah, exactly. We're just going to watch the episodes and have nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
Otherwise, because that's it. We've covered it all already. We're just going to be like, right, just go re-listen to season two of our podcast because you'll get all of season three there.
And probably season one as well, let's be honest.
Yeah.
We've been talking about season three since day one.
I was literally just going to say, since day one, we were like, oh, season three, that exists.
There are so many good moments, though. I do have a lot of happy memories of season three as well.
So do I.
Things that really made me laugh out loud. Things that I was like, oh my God, that's so cute. Or, yeah, there is plenty.
Yes, exactly. So we'll stop talking about it now.
Yeah.
Well, hold on to it.
Consider more of season two.
Yeah, exactly. We'll let season three be its own goddamn season and start loving or hating it when we get there.
Should we challenge ourselves? In the next episode of the pod, should we try not to talk about season three at all?
I thought you were going to say for the rest of season two.
I'm not sure we can promise that.
Thing is, I don't think we can promise not mentioning it in next next episode either.
I think we should try. I think it'd be quite funny.
Okay.
We'll have to have a drink of water every time we talk about it.
What are you going to tell me, to go buy some alcohol every time we mention season three? Take a sip. What a podcast episode that'd be.
That would be you very drunk, considering I'm ridiculously pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
So that would be me talking like this and you'd just be like that.
I'm already like that.
That is a good point.
Could you imagine? I couldn't.
Oh, God. Well, I think that is everything. We have rambled
Why
on.
Are you still listening?
That is a good question.
Why are you still listening? What is wrong with you? First of all, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with us?
I know.
But what's wrong with you?
You've got to think about that. You've got to have a long, hard think to yourself. Why are you listening to these?
I'm pretty sure we just spent 17 minutes rambling on about season three and who the hell knows what else. That's 17 minutes of your life. 18 minutes of your life wasted. You could have written a book by now. You could have cured cancer or something.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, people. We are just the way we are. And that is all I've got to say on the matter.
Yep. I think with that, on that terrible disappointment, it's time to end.
Thank you so much for listening. If you are still around after Tom's little rant then, asking you why you're here. Thank you so, so much. We do appreciate
it. We do. If you can't tell, we really do.
And we're very excited if you want to come back and listen to more of our rambles.
Please do.
So, we'll be back soon with the next episode. Do you remember the episode name?
The Pollywog.
The Pollywog.
Yay! It's not the first where I've known it. Yay!
We're getting there. We've got a few brain cells left to remember things now.
They're chugging along. Picture hop... Not hop... Hopper. Picture Homer Simpson with the monkey with the cymbals tapping away inside his head.
That's a live view to Tom's head right now.
Literally, that is me doing this podcast because I just want to watch the next goddamn episode.
Well, hopefully we can record that tomorrow. We're going to try and finally get ahead of ourselves for once in our lives.
You mean we can't watch it now when it's 10:45?
Absolutely not. I'll be asleep.
Me too. I'm sad now.
And on that note, we'll finally finish.
Are we sure?
I think so. I think at this point we're just going to have an abrupt ending. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, bye.
Bye.